Okay, so Colin's away, and there are other people away. Really encouraged by the numbers over the summer. When you're at the cutting edge of planting the church, numbers are really important. And it's not all about numbers, but an element it is. You know, are the numbers going up or down? Are the numbers holding? Are the numbers looking? So when it gets to summer, you take a deep breath because you think, this could be, I could be talking to Hillary this morning, you know, Nathan, Hillary and myself. So it's great to see you all this morning. For those of you that are listening on podcast, of which there was 1 week we also get statistics, 45 people listened to podcasts a few weeks ago. In a week? Was that you 45 times, Russell? No? What was that? I really can't get that. I'll have to listen to that again. So for all those that are out there listening to the podcast, whatever you're doing, welcome. And I hope that you are challenged by what you hear. As I was preparing the message, I had a sense that somebody is listening to the podcast. And as they're listening to the podcast, they're looking at the sea. Yes, you. So if you're looking at the sea when you're hearing the podcast, the Lord really, really wants to speak to you today through this podcast. So really, really listen. And if you're here today and you want to listen to it during the week, go and listen by the sea. All right? So we've been following the series Faithful, F-U-L-L. And Colin has done a number of weeks on it. And simply want to summarize the word faith that he uses, which is the Greek word pistis. And it means to be fully convinced or fully persuaded by God. So during Colin's first message, I got the title of today's message. And the title of today's message is Faithful in the Storm. All right? So the message that I'm giving you today is currently steeped in a storm. It has been weathered and forged from many storms over many years. And what I'm communicating, I am not communicating in a false positive reality, as in everything's going to be fine, you know, there's storm and it's disaster, but everything's going to be fine. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a message, excuse me, that has been mined in the seams of adversity, persecution, disappointment, adversity, death. So what I communicate this morning, I am communicating having lived it, having experienced it, and having applied what I want to communicate to you this morning. And I am fully convinced and persuaded by God of its truth, its life, and therefore its relevance to us on this journey. We can all get through the storms. They will pass, and we can reach our destination. And here, like every church on the face of the earth, we are destination disciples going after the destination, Jesus Christ, and his health and his wholeness, and that's attainable for us. So, for you this morning, and those of you listening on podcast, have ears to hear what the Spirit is saying this morning. So this morning, there's a call, there's a compulsion, there's a conviction to catalambano the truth. We've used this word a lot throughout the year, to lay hold of the truth. Not to let it pass you by, not to go, yeah, must really, yeah, yeah. Lay hold of the truth. Apply the truth. There's going to be a conviction of wrong thinking. Hopefully you'll get a bit of reorientation and realignment. Another two themes of our the sense of what God wants to speak to us during the course of 2018. Realignment and reorientation regarding how we think about things. And an impartation of faith for our current storms and the storms to come. All right? Storm defined, a violent disturbance of the atmosphere with strong winds and usually rain, thunder, lightning, or snow. And it often, if they're very severe, have the potential for damage and destruction. In fact, the Met Office really classify most of their storms by the extent of damage that's going to take place. And the higher the grade, yellow or red, then it gets to the point of damage to property, damage to life. And when it comes to the hurricanes and tornadoes, they have government curfews in the parts of the world that happens. The army come on the streets to keep people safe for their own safety's sake because of the danger and the severity of the storms. Storms are a reality of living and breathing. We get storms. We get it in the natural, and we get it in our everyday life. Potential storms, or storms that you've all experienced. Storms in relationships. Storms that are the consequences of history. The should have, could have, would have. But here we are in the storm. Storms of health, sudden illness, chronic illness, diseases, syndromes, conditions, death, trauma, disappointment, seeming ending of hopes and dreams. Storms of your making, their making, our making, the evil one's making, the world's making, God's making. Well, we'll come to that a little bit later. Some are merely uncomfortable and inconvenient. Some are devastating and destructive, like tornadoes and hurricanes. And they can, the extent of the storm that we experience in life sometimes can mark us for life. So, who hasn't experienced storms? Everybody's experienced storms. Maybe you'd like to experience storms that I experienced, that like an inconvenient little storm last week. So as part of my training, I have to do open water swims. Now, open water swims, I have to be honest, I find them, first time I did it, I did actually find it seriously traumatic. And the first time I swam with a bunch of other people, I was doing the swim, and as I swam to stay alive and keep breathing, I was asking myself, why did I decide to do this stupid thing? As the salt water and the cold penetrated my mouth and penetrated my body. So last week, in preparation for a race on this Wednesday, race being in inverted commas, I was going to do an open water swim in Ballyhome. Anybody wants to do an open water swim? Every Monday during the summer, Ballyhome Beach. So the wind was picking up a wee bit. I was looking out at the sea this side of the loch. I was thinking, it's pretty calm. It's going to be all right. Get it done. Get it done. As it came around the headland around Bangor, the wind was then not being stopped by the mountains on this side of the loch, but it was exposed sea. It's looking very choppy. And it's looking pretty, it's not stormy, but it's pretty choppy. And I'm thinking, oh man, I'm here now. I've just traveled 20 miles. I'm here now. And I get up to the Ballyhome Yacht Club, which is where you swim from. There's not a lot of people about. I'm thinking, oh, chickens. So I'm walking up. And as I walk up to the front door, it says, swimming has been cancelled. And a little bit inside me went, yes. So I walk, as I was walking out, this woman was coming. She had all her gear as well. And I said, I'm afraid it's cancelled. And she goes, oh, is it? Oh, I was kind of hoping it would be. Now, it would be nice if we could just go, can we just cancel the storm? Could we just call it off? Could we just let it not happen to us? Could we just not experience it? Could we just cancel it? But as we know, that doesn't really work. That doesn't really happen. That is a false positive reality. The storms will always happen, and we'll always experience them in different shapes, in forms, and different intensities. So we're going to look at a biblical example of not being faithful in the storm. Not being faithful in the storm. There are three accounts of it in the Gospels, and I'm going to be reading from Mark 4:35, and then we're going to dip into the other translations or other accounts in the other two Gospels. They're from, if you're taking notes on your podcast, and those of you who are taking notes here, it's in found in Matthew 8 as well as Mark 4 and also in Luke 8. So from Mark 4:35, that day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, let us go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was already swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, teacher, don't you care if we drown? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." So the undisputed facts from the accounts from the gospel are, number one, Jesus called them over to the other side. The disciples were in the boat with Jesus. It says in two versions, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." And in the other gospel it says, "Then he got into the boat and his disciples followed him." So they were in the boat, they were with him. Two, the storm was real, present, and life-threatening. Described as a furious storm, a furious squall, a squall. I've actually been to the Sea of Galilee, and actually it's quite hard to take in because it's not that big. It's just, I thought it was like a sea, but it's actually not that big. It's more like it almost looks a bit like a loch. So to actually find that a storm could come up and actually threaten life, which apparently is common when the winds, because it's quite high up, it's quite surprising. But it says in the Gospels, the boat was being breached by the water. So the waves swept over the boat, broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped, and they were in great danger. Now, got to bear in mind that there are a couple of professional seamen, professional fishermen in the boat, in the midst of all the disciples, and they all feared for their lives. Every version, every gospel talks about the word drowned. They all feared that they were going to drown. It was a serious business. So three, Jesus was sleeping and they woke him. He wasn't afraid. He wasn't worried. He knows where he's going, to the other side of the lake, and he knows what the next step is. Did he know that there would be a storm? Doesn't say. Don't know. But he was sleeping on a cushion in Mark, and he was a happy camper until the disciples came and they woke him up. And when they woke him up, he rebuked the storm and it was still. Christ can still remain our rest regardless of our circumstances and our situations. The paradox that we can still be in a place of calm and rest even though we're in a storm. Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." John 16:33 in the Amplified says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have perfect peace. In the world you have tribulation and distress and suffering, but be courageous, be confident, be undaunted, be filled with joy. I have overcome the world. My conquest is accomplished, my victory abiding." Now the tense in that "my victory is abiding" is called present continuous tense. That means I have victory, I have victory, and I will continue to have victory. Not then, not on the cross and in the resurrection, but now, every day, all the time, it's available to us rest and peace. The paradox that in the trouble, we can have peace. In the calm and rest, we can be in the storm. So he rebuked the storm, and then he rebuked his disciples in three ways in the gospel accounts. I'm going to read them out, and these are the 3 points regarding what we want to drill into about faith this morning. In Luke, he says, "Where is your faith?" In Matthew, he says, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" And in Mark, he says, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" So the three rebukes to the disciples who were not faithful, how do they apply to us? Number one, where is your faith? Who is in the boat with us? Who is this Jesus? What are his promises directly spoken by him or in Scripture as in the Word that should stir our faith, affirm our faith, and enliven our faith? Why don't we believe what we're supposed to believe? We don't have him physically beside us. We don't have him physically in our everyday, the storms that we're experiencing. But we have him by his Spirit. He sent his Spirit who dwells in us. 1 Corinthians 3:16, "Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in your midst?" We have Christ with us by his Spirit. John 14, 25 to 27. All this have I spoken while still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give you. I do not give you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid. Where is your faith? He's with us. He's in the boat with us. He's in the storm with us. He accompanies us on our journey. Two, from Matthew, you of little faith, why are you so afraid? Fear causes little faith, or little faith causes fear? Fear, little faith, fear. Maybe it's just a cycle, downward spiral. What we want to do is we want to break that downward cycle, that increasing fear, decreasing faith, increasing fear, decreasing faith. We want to get over that, past that. That needs to be broken. The Passion Translation of 2 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God will never give you the spirit of fear." But God will never give you the spirit of fear, but the Holy Spirit who gives you mighty power, love, and self-control. For God will never give you the spirit of fear, but the Holy Spirit who gives you mighty power, love, and self-control. 1 John 4:18, there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. Why are we so afraid? Then in Mark's version 3, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? And in this exchange in Mark, the disciples pointed their finger at Jesus. And they said, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown? Don't you care if we drown?" Whoa, they were big boys. They were getting a little bit scary and all their toys went out the pram and they went, "Don't you," and started pointing the fingers at Jesus. There's a less familiar storm. Probably because we find it hard to get our head around. Has anybody heard of an ice storm? Right. I have experienced an ice storm in Kansas City. It was one of their biggest ice storms in a generation. And what marks the ice storm are two things, three things, four things. I'll run them out. The rain falls as rain, but on the ground, the temperature is significantly colder, below freezing. So when the rain falls from the sky and hits the ground, it hits the ground like wax from a candle and instantly freezes. There's no wind, and the first time, well, the only time that I was in Kansas City, it's the word you use would be insidious, right? And the definition of the word of insidious is proceeding in a gradual, subtle way, but with very harmful effects. So sometimes they talk about that with diseases. In my business, glaucoma. Okay, it's an insidious disease. Unless the pressure goes through your eye and you're in acute pain and you get rushed to the hospital, the chronic form, you don't know you have it. No idea that you have it. You'll not even be aware that your vision has been affected because it'll affect your outside of your vision first. Your central vision will be okay. And you can have massive problems with your sight. And by the time you've discovered it from your own symptoms, you can really only control the speed at which you lose your eyesight. Little plug for make sure you get your eyes tested on a regular basis. And if you've got any family members of that have glaucoma and you're over the age of 40, you get it free. All right? So get it done. Get your eyes tested. It's insidious. So they said there's a nice storm coming and there's a little bit of rain. And they said it's really bad. I'm going, no, it's not. And why is it called a storm? Because there's no wind. What's going on? But if you can imagine that that drizzle that we had this morning, landing in those privet hedges, freezes as soon as it hits the privet hedges. And you have it goes on for 2, 3, 4 days. Then what actually happens, believe it or not, is that those privet hedges become blocks of ice. I don't mean they've got icicles on them. I am talking about absolute solid blocks of ice. You need to take a sledgehammer. It's just like a block of ice, those privet hedges. Now, Imagine that those privet hedges are not privet hedges, but the trees around the privet hedges. And those branches have become solid blocks of ice. Well, what happens as the ice storm continues is that the trees can't take the weight of the solid blocks of ice anymore, and they start to collapse. So there was no wind, there was just rain, and this thing of absolute beauty, like those little shrubs just became completely encased in ice. Not frozen, encased in ice. It was just beautiful and amazing until the fourth night when we were in our beds and it sounded as though there was a giant walking about outside our house, because you just heard trees were literally splitting in the middle. Massive trees were falling down because they weren't designed. They were designed to take the storm. They were designed to take the rain and the wind, but they weren't designed to take the weight of the ice, and they collapsed. Absolutely spectacular. We had to get to the airport the morning where it started to reach its peak, and it was like something out of the movies. It was like a war zone. There were branches, trees, all over the place. There were emergency services. We didn't know where they were going to get out. It was absolute chaos from an ice storm. Unbelief is like an ice storm. It's insidious. It just is there. It just grows. It cools your faith. It layers up. It causes more and more weight, and it causes your faith to collapse. And it is absolute disaster, deadly as far as your faith and your journey is concerned. Sound familiar to any of us? Unbelief. So, three things that he said. Where is your faith? You have little faith. Why are you so afraid? And why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? What's the application of that? How do we not do what the disciples did? How can we experience the storm, apply biblical truth so that we experience the storm and we don't become fearful? We don't lose our faith. We don't think that we're going to die. Well, number one, we got to really, yada gnosko know this Jesus you travel with. Now, we've talked about yada gnosko many times. Yada is a Hebrew word. Gnosko is the Greek word for to know. I mean, to really know, to be intimate know, to be one know. Like Adam knew Eve is a yada. Know the truth and it will set you free is the gnosko in the New Testament. A really knowing this person who is in the boat. I know him. And everything's going to be all right. And we will get to our destination with him. How is your relationship with him? What are you doing to grow and develop it? And if the answer to that question is, how's that working for you? Because if you're in the boat, and he's in the boat, and you sort of know about him, but you don't really know him, you might just find that the ability to not believe and the ability to panic as the water comes over the edges of your boat increases dramatically, and your faith decreases dramatically because you don't know him. You don't know that it's going to be okay. He is sleeping. What would have happened? Don't have to answer this because I'm not going to answer it. What would have happened if the disciples hadn't woken Jesus? Well, the water was coming in the boat. Well, he said, we're getting to the other side. So if you know him and he says, we're getting to the other side, we're getting to the other side, because what he says goes. So what would happen if he just slept on? Would the storm have abated? Would they have gone, well, if he's okay, well, we just tell him to shut up. And they do it. I don't know. But they woke him up, got him on his feet. So you got to really yada gnosko know this Jesus. It's about relationship. It's not about religion. It's about relationship, about knowing him, knowing who he is. I mean, knowing, really knowing that what he says he means and what he says he will do. And we've got to build a boat with our planks of timber that are based on that truth. So what are your planks of timber on your boat made of? We need planks of timber that are going to crash through any storm. We need planks of timber that are not going to be weathered by big waves, little waves, salty waves, cold, freezing conditions, strong winds, light winds, whatever it happens to be, winds from the east, winds from the west. We need to build our boat with the planks that will not weather. And the planks are Jesus Christ, His Word. Jesus Christ is the same today, yesterday, and forever. Hebrews 13:8. He does not change, He will not weather. So we build our boat with the planks that just are not going to weather. What we know to be true, what we really know to be true, not in our head, because if it's just in our head, when the big wave crashes, it pops out, because we haven't got it sealed from relationship and ownership and knowing that it's part of us. We believe it, we own it. Some examples: never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. What can mere mortals do to me? Hebrews 13:5-6. You got to cattle and banal these things. And maybe the experience of storms and what you've learned in the storms as your faith has grown means that you've put in planks that you know it. Because it's almost marked with the, 1986, 2000. There, that's the year. That's the year we put that plank in. I mean, we really put that plank in because we came through the storm. We learned and we got it and we know. Psalm 23:4, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Psalm 34:18, the Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Psalm 16:8. 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. We got to know the truth. We got to know who is the truth, Jesus Christ. And the two are interchangeable. We've got to know Him. We've got to know the truth. He's in the boat. He is the boat. He's part of the boat. It all works together. We're in intimate relationship with Him. And He is our boat that gets us through the storm. Step one in the four-step freedom plan, which you can find down at the back there, says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice, that's the application of the truth that you hear, is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. So grant me a little bit of grace here. So we're moving from the boat to the house and then back to the boat. He was rock solid because he took the truth and he applied it. And when the waves came and the storm came and the streams rose up, he was rock solid. We need to be rock solid. We don't need to be, or should we be going, help me, save me, when we're in the boat. Because if we're in the boat and it's His boat and He's with us, He's going to get us through it anyway. We just cling on to Him. You know, the talk in the old days about strapping yourself to the mast. So the sailors were out in the sea. They didn't know the rudder was broken, or they couldn't control the direction because of the winds. And they strapped themselves to the mast because if the ship didn't go down, the mast would stay intact. And they just strapped themselves to the mast and held on. Some of the circumstances, some of the storms that we've experienced, maybe it's the evil one coming to try and take us out. Maybe it's a result of our stupidity, our humanity, our sinfulness, and we're paying the consequences of that. Maybe it's an assignment of God. Yes, an assignment of God that allows difficulty, adversity, and trial to come our way to grow us up. So we have to go through the storm again because it didn't quite get that plank in place. And then we panicked, and then we lost our faith, and then we started to point our finger at God. We don't ever want to be pointing our finger at God in that way. Where are you? Why don't you help me? Why? Why did you let that happen to me? Why did you let that happen to them? Why don't you like me? Why do you like everybody else? It's not fair. It's one rule for them and it's another rule for someone else. Why have you abandoned me? Pointing the finger. You want to point the finger at anything, point the finger at the planks on the boat. This I know. This is your promise, that you will never leave me or forsake me. Now, I'm getting blown all over the place, but I'm hanging on to this plank. This plank is rock solid. I'm going to be okay because you'll never leave me and you will never forsake me. Point to the promises. And they might be promises in the Word. They may be assurances that He's given you about how you're going to get through situations in life, and you're trusting Him for the way on. You're holding tight to the way on. And my experience is that the light bearers in suffering, the people that shine, like, wow, my goodness, how did they survive that? How did they manage that? How did they cope with that? Don't ask or seek answers to questions from God. Job tried it. It really didn't work very well. If you want to read the last five or six chapters of Job, he goes and basically starts to point the finger at God. God turns up and goes, speaks from the storm and says, where were you? Where were you when I created the world? Where were you when I worked out how things work together, how the sun rises in the morning and sets in the evening? Where were you? And he then proceeded to tell him the things that he did in comparison to him. And Job's response to that was, surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. So maybe it's suffering, maybe it's attack, maybe it's adversity for our growth. Could we really handle the truth if we got the truth? Would it help if we got answer to the questions that we were asking? Especially when we're dealing with a God for whom it says in Isaiah 55, for my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. If he gave you his higher answer, his higher thoughts, you still couldn't process the information anyway. So don't ask the questions that you don't need to ask. You might want to ask it. I think that's okay. In intimacy and transparency, God, why? But we don't have the right, and we don't have to have the expectation that he will give us an answer to that. And I think that's sometimes where we fall over. We're waiting for him to tell us why this storm hit the fan. We don't need an answer to that. So her name was Sadie Garvin. Died at 84 after a local anesthetic to remove her hip and get her hip replaced because she didn't want to miss the experience for anything. Was laid on a bed at the age of two and told by her parents were told by the doctor there's nothing more that they could do for her. Right? Tiny little woman, full of faith. In the My cloud of witnesses, I think everybody maybe has a cloud of witnesses that they can see people of the faith that are cheering them on. She's long gone up there having a great time. When she invited you around to her house, she invited you around for ice cream and jelly. Her and her husband were walking out on the Cave Hill when they were growing up. And there were thousands of people because nobody had any garden centers to go to or cinema to go to or Funky Monkeys or whatever people do on Sundays. So they all basically walked up all over the Cave Hill or over any other hill they could get. And apparently there were, you know, this weather, there would be literally thousands of people taking the air, right? And Sadie and her husband-to-be said, that'd be a good place to have a shop. So at the top of the Cave Hill Road, there's a spar shop. And above that, there's Upper Cave Hill Road. And in the Second World War, there was 400 American soldiers that were stationed there for about 8 weeks. She got to know them, and then she said goodbye to them. And none of them got to the war because the boat that they were all in was hit by a torpedo in the Bay of Biscay, and every single one of them died. So Sadie Garvin regaled you with these stories. She wrote a book, actually, because the stories were so mad, deep, significant, that she wanted our family always to remember them. I was an elder, used to go in for a visit, came about 5 hours later, literally 5 hours later, filled with jelly and ice cream. She had 5 children. She had 2 perfectly healthy children that were born that died in her arms 4 or 5 days after they were born because they were rhesus negative. The second child died on the Thursday, and the first rhesus negative blood transfusion took place on the following Monday in the Royal Victoria Hospital. She lost a healthy child by 5 days. That woman shone with faith through the storm because her boat was made of the truth. She would get up every morning and she would lie on her back. So obviously before she got up, she'd be lying on her back. She woke up and she would go, "This is the Lord the day has made. We will rejoice and be glad." And she would throw the key and jump out of bed. That was her attitude to life. But she had experienced some profoundly difficult storms, but she shone like a beacon. Why did she go through those storms? Maybe she went through those storms because the person who's currently listening to the podcast and looking out at the sea is going, "My goodness, God is really speaking to me through Sadie Garvin. Did she have to lose a child for this moment? I don't know." She didn't ask those questions. She knew that she was going to meet them in heaven when she got to heaven, and she was without doubt going to heaven, and her funeral was by far one of the best funerals I have ever been to. I mean, a celebration, a life well lived and a life to come. Faithful in the storm. She was rock solid. All she was interested in was who's on the boat and what is my boat made of. And if I know who is in the boat and what the boat is made of and it's made of the right stuff, any storm, any problem, any difficult, we will smash through it. It will pass. We will get to the destination and we will be faithful in the storm. Nathan, do you want to come up? Storms come and storms can't be cancelled. Do you really know? I mean, do you really know Jesus who's in the boat with you in your life? Are you in an intimate relationship with him? Do you yada gnosko know him? And if you're listening on a podcast and your answer to that is actually no, my encouragement to you with passion and with authenticity is that this is the best decision that you can ever make in your life, to invite Jesus Christ into your life, to say sorry for how you've maybe stuffed up your life or made mistakes in your life, how you're a sinner, how he loves you, died for you, and rose again. Ask him into the boat. Ask him into the boat. Do you want to be rock solid? Do you want to be, hear me now. Do you want to be rock solid? Like the boat's like going back and forth and you've got the sea legs. The boat's like tipping like mad and you're walking up the middle of the boat with a cup of coffee and the paper because you're on it. You're rock solid. This boat is not capsizing. There might be water coming over the side. This boat is not capsizing because Jesus is in the boat with me. The boat is rock solid. Please stand with me. Are you tired and weary of having to put up with the storms and the fear that they generate in you? Do you want to really know, really know the Prince of Peace and who he is and what he brings? Peace in the paradox of the storm. Peace in the paradox of the storm. And do you want to just be rock solid? Whatever the day brings, whatever the circumstances are, whatever the situations I have to face, I am rock solid. If you want or need any of those, please come join me at the front. We're going to worship for a while and then we're going to minister.